friend, I knew you when our common goal was waiting for the world to end. Now that the truth is just a rule that you can bend.
Welcome to Book, the podcast where two guys tell you about the books that they're reading. I'm Livia Snedden.
And I'm Rob Olson. Tonight, we will be talking about Hog Doggin' by Anthony Neal Smith. Anthony Neal Smith is the author of Yellow Medicine, which we reviewed previously, Hog Doggin', which is the follow-up to Yellow Medicine, the E! Original, Choke on Your Lies, and others. Anthony Neal Smith is the director of creative writing for Southwest Minnesota State University, and he's the publisher of the noir webzine Plots with Guns.
Hog Doggin' was originally released June 2009, and to explain a little bit for those of you who have heard us promise timely book reviews, the reason we're reviewing this now is that Anthony Neal Smith just this past week released it in ebook format, the same reason we did Yellow Medicine just a few weeks back here. So we're going back to the Billy Lafitte well. I love Billy Lafitte. I know Rob really liked him too. So let me preface this by saying I strongly recommend that you read Yellow Medicine. But you don't have to read Yellow Medicine. And I was really looking at this from standpoint of when I was reading this book. This is written well enough and gives enough backstory that you don't need to read Yellow Medicine. We're also not going to spoil anything that happens in Yellow Medicine during this book review. So if you're thinking about tuning out because you want to get Yellow Medicine, come back to us after you've read it. If not, go ahead and hang in there. We're not going to ruin anything for you. Right. Hog Doggin' picks up a little under a year after Billy Lafitte's debut in Yellow Medicine. Billy has gone on the lam and is hiding out as the sergeant at arms for a motorcycle gang and is second in command to Steel God, a mountain of a man that runs this motorcycle gang.
And also appearing again in this book is the somewhat nemesis of Billy Lafitte from Yellow Medicine, Agent Franklin Rome. He's an FBI agent who has kind of a personal score to settle with Billy. He's reassigned to New Orleans, and we discover that he is still relentlessly determined to bring Billy down.
Billy receives a call from a friend of his, letting him know that Agent Rome has been putting pressure on Billy's estranged family. So Billy tries to split off from his motorcycle club to make sure that everything is okay with his family, and chaos ensues. This time around, there are a whole slew of characters that are out to get Billy.
Yeah, and actually, that's a really good point that I kind of noticed throughout reading Hog Doggin' versus the way that Yellow Medicine went, is that Yellow Medicine seemed like it was really focusing on Billy and the fact that Billy made a ton of really bad choices throughout the book. Hog Doggin' deviates a little bit from that theme, where Billy obviously is still making the bad choices that he always makes, but it seems like practically everybody else is making some bad choices too. It's really an ensemble cast of fuck-ups is the best way that I can describe it.
Yeah, definitely. Yellow Medicine stayed very, very tight with Lafitte throughout the story. This one branches off to cover a couple of different stories. And interestingly enough, the characters, I mean, are all very well developed a lot of times. And this is something we talked about, I think it was on our last podcast, where those cutaway scenes from your main character and the guy you really like are kind of just they just pull you away from what you want. So you're like, okay, let me read through this real quick so I can get back to the main character. But Smith really develops these characters and does it in a way that kind of makes each one of them... endearing isn't exactly the right word that I'm looking for, and I'm at a little bit of a loss here, but you really sympathize with them, even though you're definitely not on their side, because you're rooting for our hero.
You're bought into them.
Yeah, I mean, you, as the book goes on, you really feel and understand why they're doing it, and in some ways, I mean, ultimately, you know, you're still rooting for the hero, but in some ways, you kind of feel bad if they don't get, you know, what they're looking for.
I don't know if I go 100% with you on that one. I disagree a little bit. I think that there's a really good buy-in for the characters. I personally felt that some of the decisions and some of the feelings that the characters had, I just didn't agree with, or it didn't sit well with me. But there was a good buy-in. I was definitely interested to see where the story went for all of the different characters. And he developed a handful of characters, especially... like we said before, Agent Rome, which was the kind of nemesis from the first book. Agent Rome's wife, who I don't even think was mentioned in Yellow Medicine.
She was not. I don't think so.
Yeah, she was developed pretty well in the book. There was also a lot of stuff with the Motorcycle Club and another FBI agent working with Rome named Josh McEwen. So, not contrary, but in a different way from Yellow Medicine, you got to see a lot of these individual stories develop, and he did have a good buy-in for you for, I think, practically all of them. Even if, like I said, I personally didn't agree with the decisions that they were making or, you know, the way that their story, personal stories went, maybe I wasn't supposed to agree with it. It's kind of, like I said before, they're all making really bad choices.
Yeah, and he's upped the ante with the sex and violence in this book, too. It starts off much harder hitting than Yellow Medicine, and it seems to be a little faster paced. And maybe that's because we're looking at several different character stories kind of spread throughout the book, but it seemed to move quicker. And don't get me wrong, I loved Yellow Medicine. But this just seemed to move a little faster.
Some of that could be the fact that we already know the characters and we have a lot of backdrop that he doesn't have to develop.
Yeah, again, Billy's the underdog, and you're rooting for him pretty much no matter what. And it seems like no matter what he does, he can't. He gets grittier in this book, I think. And you're just totally bought into the character. And that's what I loved about him from the first book. And it's what I continue to love about Billy Lafitte.
And another thing that, a theme that I kind of picked up on in this book, or at least this is how I took it, was even when he tries to do a noble thing and to do the right thing, or at least what he sees as the right thing, it still just it just feels like it doesn't work for him. So he's just constantly down on his luck.
Yeah, back to your original statement, I think that he makes better choices this time around. You know, it's like he's cleaned himself up in his head at least. But yeah, I mean, he wanders down that dark path again. And back to Steel God. What a phenomenal character. And the only thing I think that really I found to be missing from this book was a little more about him.
Agreed. I fully agree with that.
Yeah. So, hey, Smith, why didn't we get more Steel God? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I want a Steel God prequel. And another kind of cool thing that I liked about the book, or a unique thing, was how the motorcycle club in general was developed. And it's, I mean, I've read enough stuff about, you know, motorcycle gangs and watched enough TV to see what kind of the typical, you know, motorcycle club is. And this definitely is that, but maybe it's just what he chose to focus on. But most of what I was seeing and hearing from the motorcycle club was more of the human element of people wanting to do the right thing in a very bad situation, which I guess kind of in a way reflects Billy throughout this book in general.
So it's 313 pages. It certainly doesn't read like it's that long. I mean, this book really flew by, and this is my my second read through of it. I don't know how much that affects. You know, it's weird because, well, up until this point in my life, I read books to pass time and enjoy stories. Now I found that I review books and I look for the good and I look for the bad and I scribble down little notes to mention during our review. And interestingly enough, this is the second book I'm rereading for this podcast, and I don't know how that affects my outcome on it, because I'm more critical in a way, or maybe because I like the books, I'm less critical the second time around. But this book just flew by, even quicker than Yellow Medicine did. And like I said, I don't know. For me, maybe it seemed faster paced. Maybe I was just reading it in a different mindset. But yeah, it's a very, very quick read.
Yeah. And another thing before we get way too off the subject, in the book, I'm going toward the title of the book, which is Hog Dog, and in the book he defines it as when you put a hog into a pen, and then you just have several dogs rip into the hog for sport. So it's kind of a spectator sport, much like dog fighting or something would be. And it's really an apt title, like we mentioned before. It seems like there's all these individual characters that are out, that are actively out to get Billy, and so they're kind of the dogs, and poor guy, he's the hog.
Sure. Yeah, and what a hog he is. Yeah, he's Zuckerman's famous pig from Charlotte's Web. I'm endeared to Billy Lafitte. I was from the first time I read Yellow Medicine. And I think he just got better in this book, too. So definitely one of those characters that's... a lot of times when you think about a book, you think, oh, it's a book about this guy, you know, that these things happen to him and stuff. Once you read these books, Billy Lafitte is what you think of when you think about the book, not the poor guy who used to be a cop who's in a motorcycle gang. I mean, he really imprints himself in your mind.
And surprisingly in this book, or not surprisingly, I guess, Billy, it seems like he's always been pretty loyal and a big family man throughout Yellow Medicine. One of the like, kind of the reason that he's trying to turn himself around, even though it doesn't work, is because he wants to make sure that his kids are provided for and everything. It's mentioned several times in the book that, you know, he always makes his payments, child support payments or whatever they are. And family is a very big and consistent theme in this book, whether it's the motorcycle club, which, if you ask me, is a family in a way, and you've got Agent Rome and his wife and the dynamics there. You've obviously got Billy and his wife Ginny and her mother and their kids and everything that they're going through. So family is a very consistent theme throughout, and there's lots of loyalty that goes along with that and everything. And I liked it. I liked the way that family was worked into the story, even in such a dark and kind of nasty story.
Yeah, and we finally get to meet Ginny, and, you know, spoiler alert, she's kind of broken. She's not the woman I kind of thought Billy idealized. I mean, we find out some things about her, and Billy still loves her, and she's not, you know, she's not the perfect, you know, mom and wife. You know, she's got some of her own stuff going on. So it's, again, kind of nice to get that character in there and to show, again, a more real side of him. You know, she wasn't this, you know, fantastic, you know, partner and mom and everything all along. I mean, he still loves her despite her faults.
Which, I'm glad you mentioned that. And I don't think this will spoil anything from Yellow Medicine, but at least my impression from reading Yellow Medicine, I didn't get the feeling that there was any real, like, brokenness to Ginny. I just figured, I mean, she might have just been touched on so briefly, but my impression was it was just a mom who made a decision, you know, for the betterment of her kids, or the decision that would benefit her kids the best, and that meant splitting up. I didn't really get a feeling that there was any kind of trouble with her in this story.
No, and I didn't either, and that's why I said it was just very nice to see that, you know, Lafitte's lost love is, you know, isn't perfect. She's like the rest of us. She's a little broken in her own way.
Another big theme that I can't say that I picked up on, because, like, it's very obvious, is the idea of vengeance and blame. And throughout the book, the object of a lot of vengeance and blame, not surprisingly, is Billy Lafitte. It's pretty consistent throughout. You know, Agent Rome, like we mentioned before, and just random people along the way who decide to, I don't know if they're trying to take advantage of a situation and it goes wrong, but it seems like everything falls squarely in Billy's lap. He's always the one that's to blame. The finger is being pointed at him.
Yeah, he's certainly a thorn in some sides in this book. Yeah, you know, and again, I mentioned it earlier, but, you know, much more violent start to this book. Not overwhelmingly violent throughout, but there is a considerable amount more there, and then some exploration about not just, as you said, you know, love and family, but there's some sexual exploration there too. So, I mean, he really covers a lot of bases in this book. Overall, a very well-rounded book. Again, it doesn't read like it's 300 pages, at least it didn't to me. Did it feel that long to you?
Well, I have an interesting perspective on that, because I read most of my books on Kindle, and so my typical routine on the weekends is that I'll take my Kindle and I'll head out to the local Starbucks. The local Starbucks for me is a 25-minute drive through the mountains of Vermont and New Hampshire. But I'll take my Kindle and I'll head out to the Starbucks, and this is exactly what I did on the Sunday that I was reading this book. I order my drink, I get settled in, pull my Kindle out, turn it on, and the screen's broken. I panicked because I knew that we had to record this episode, didn't know what to do, so I ended up going home and reading the entire book in one sitting in about 9.5 hours on my iPhone. So as much as I did think it was a fast read, it was not the most comfortable read.
You hear that, Smith? You read your book on an iPhone. How many people do you think could say that?
In one marathon sitting.
One marathon sitting. I've read, actually... Odd that you mentioned this, because apparently I only read Anthony Neil Smith. I read Choke on Your Lies. I had to read on my phone because I got an EPUB copy of it. And because of the Nook Digital Rights Management, I bought the EPUB because I thought I could read it on my Sony reader, which read EPUBs, but because of the DRM, I wasn't able to. So yeah, that I read on an application in my little Android phone. So you're not the only one that's read an Anthony Neil Smith book on their phone. There's at least two of us out there.
You can't just give me one, you know.
Concession. No, I can't. And as a matter of fact, I did it first. Just saying.
All right, that's fair. 313 pages. It doesn't feel like it. It definitely feels a lot faster, a lot easier to get through.
So again, I strongly recommend you read Yellow Medicine. I'm a completist when it comes to that. I can't jump on anything, you know, in the midpoint or partway into the series. As a matter of fact, I vividly remember two and a half years ago was the first time I started tracking how many books I read, and I was on this desperate kick, as I'm sure you remember, Rob, to get to a book a week. And midsummer, I was wandering around the library, the cover for Hog Dog and caught my eye. I picked it up, I read the cover, and I thought, this sounds really good. And then I realized that there's a book before it, so I had to track down Yellow Medicine. For me, there was no other choice, and there's never another choice, but for me to go back and read it from the beginning. I really, and again, I put some thought into this being a reread for me, and knowing that we were going to do this. There's enough of the backstory there for you to skip Yellow Medicine if you desperately feel the need to. But I strongly recommend you get acquainted with the main character, you know, from his roots, at least, and in, you know, where we pick up in the Billy Lafitte story with Yellow Medicine.
Especially considering that Mr. Smith is selling his books at the very reasonable price for ebooks of 99 cents each.
I believe that you can't even go lower. I don't think that you can go lower than a dollar. No, I'm being serious. I don't think you can go lower than a buck on Amazon. So
cheap as possible.
That is correct. You get some quotes you want to do?
Yeah.
Let's do some quotes.
All right.
Asking you if you have quotes. Asking me if I'm smoking during the podcast.
Are you smoking during the podcast?
I am.
This quote is a kind of a reflection on Agent Rome and his grudge against Billy Lafitte. Franklin had been wrong about Lafitte, but he couldn't accept that. He had to find something to pin on the guy. Should have been easy, right? Lafitte was like Pigpen from Peanuts, walked around in a cloud of dirt.
I really like that. And as I'm bookmarking stuff, and we've run into this before, that was one of the quotes I considered using. And I almost had a feeling you would use it. So I think that's why I skipped it.
I can't resist a play on words. Using the word dirt to be a dirty cop, but also, you know, because the visual of Pigpen walking around with the dirt flying around him, I thought it was just irresistible.
Okay. One of my quotes, and I'm just going to pull in the latter half of a sentence here, and just because I really like this description of Lafitte. This is from his perspective. Lafitte realized he was more of a drama fag than he'd ever imagined, just with guns.
That really sums it up in a really quick and easy way.
Okay, and my other quote, while I'm on a roll here. Like an instinctual drive to make kids with any piece of tail that offers it up for you, then jump into volcanoes if it would save the little monsters. Thought that was kind of an apt description. Last book we did was on parenting, and there's a little bit of Lafitte's theories on parenting.
Oh, nice. Nice tie-in. Yep. And I have one quote that I thought would wrap up our quote section quite nicely. This is, to me, this illustrates pretty much the exhaustion, maybe the need for relief, that it that it is just to be Billy Lafitte in a way. For a few glorious, sensory-deprived, echoing seconds, Lafitte thought he was dead, free, pure, floating, at peace. And then he realized he couldn't be dead. This felt too good to be hell.
I think that the quotes really really give you a good idea of how this is written and how well it's written. I have nothing but good things to say about Anthony Neal Smith. He's been a favorite author of mine for a couple of years now. And it's just more of the same. Just more good stuff coming.
All right. Hey, what do you think about wrapping this up and give it some stars?
Oh, I think we can do that. Would you like to go ahead and go first?
Sure. I think my wrap-up's going to be pretty quick. If anybody has listened to the Yellow Medicine review, Yellow Medicine, I gave 4.5 stars. I thought it was really original, really creative, and really well-written. It really kept you involved in the story and bought in and wanting more. And I'd say Hog Doggin's more of the same, but it's a little bit more than more of the same because you've got a nice foundation of a story that he built on, and he really branched it out into a much more multifaceted story than the first one, I believe. So I thought that was very nice. Again, really well written. It's got that darkness and violence and continuous hopelessness of a noir fiction. The Billy Lafitte character, I like him a lot. And overall, thought it was a great book. I'm going to give it, I'm going to go for consistency. Billy Lafitte's getting another 4.5 from me.
Very nice. I don't remember what I originally rated this on Goodreads, and quite honestly, I was too lazy to go back and look, and what does it really matter, I guess, if I read it again and have a different take on it. I'm pretty sure it was probably a 4-star book for me then. Again, rereading and reading for a review is, I'm learning is a very different thing from reading just for the sake of reading. And it was nice to be able to revisit this character twice in the span of, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks. Again, the writing is good. Originally, I mean, I vaguely remember when I read Hog Dog in the first time around, again, being a little disappointed that it strayed away from the main character. Still love the story overall, and, you know, there was redemption there in the development of other characters and how well they were portrayed and written. More so this time around, I kind of knew what to expect, so there wasn't that kind of letdown, like, you know, God, every other chapter is not about, you know, the main character, which does, well, a lot of times, and, you know, we touched on this during our last review, too, where Caleb J. Ross did such a good job of doing that narrative, but then stuck with his main character throughout. And then I accused some authors of doing the cutaway scenes in a narrative just to, you know, to fill story. That wasn't the case here. I mean, he really looked at fleshing out some other characters, and he did a really good job of it. That being said, I'm going to penalize him a little bit and go to 4.5 stars from a 5-star book. And here's my reason for that. I want you to try harder. I want another Billy Lafitte book, and I want it to be great, so we're not going to let you rest on your laurels here. You want 5 stars, you're going to put something out that you're going to put out the sequel to Hog Dog and make us just love the shit out of it.
Wow, I think that was the first review that actually was more of an ultimatum.
Oh, yeah, and the half star also is the half star deduction also comes from Not Enough Steel God, just saying.
Yeah, I really like that Steel God character.
I think that, and again, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but his interaction with Billy Lafitte was just fantastic throughout the book. And, you know, that I would have been more than happy to read another 70, 80 pages on top of just those two guys and kind of, you know, their relationship, you know, not, I don't want to say their feelings for it, just their interaction and their feel, the whole thing. I mean, but it was painfully brief in the book, and I would have loved to have seen more of that.
All right.
Which, again, I mean, speaks to good authorship whenever they want you, you know, whenever you want to see more, that's that means that the job was done right. So there we go. Okay, normally, right around this time, we're telling you about what else the author's doing, where you can get a hold of them, you know, hit their website. We tell you we're going to link some of this stuff. Here's what we're going to do this time. Anthony Neal Smith has agreed to be a guest on our podcast and field some questions. But we'll have him on. Hopefully, it'll be mid next week. So he will actually be our second author interview. So I'm very excited about getting a chance to pick at Mr. Smith's brain a little bit. Expect there to be more talk about Billy Lafitte and possibly on what he's working on. I mean, there are rumblings on his blog that he's working on something Lafitte related, but I'm not exactly sure what it is. So it is my mission to find out for you guys. All right. And then, Rob, word snob. Come on, throw something out at the guy. What do you got?
I'm a little bit embarrassed. I've got nothing this week. I got nothing to word snob.
That can't be right. Look at your notes again. You got to have something in there.
Zip.
All right. Well, we're not word snobbing Anthony Smith. Did we word snob him the first time? Can we just use that again? What was it? I'm sure we did.
I don't know. Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Ah, man. All right. Well, he's off the hook with that. So, yeah, again, not going to talk anymore about him. We'll do all of that talking. We're recording it 2 nights from now, so you guys, like I said, should be getting it maybe Monday, Tuesday, the 6th or the 7th, right around there sometime. So keep following on Twitter. We'll definitely have a post up on that, or Facebook, or our website, or smoke signals. I can call you if you leave a phone number and tell you it's up. That's what I do with some of our fans.
And usually on Booked, there's a part of the show where we do the read this, not that. If we think the book isn't that great, we want to suggest something you read instead, or, you know, read in addition to if we like the book and we think you might like another book that's like it. But I'm going to take it in a bit of a different direction this time. And part of it is because we've been reading a lot of kind of dark, noirish kind of books lately.
Yeah, kind of dark, kind of noirish.
And part of it is just because we haven't gone in a different direction with this, and I thought it'd be nice. So I'm gonna suggest a book that has a main character that's kind of the guy who just can't win, which is the tie-in to Billy Lafitte, but in a very funny and comic way instead of a dark noirish kind of way. And that is the character's name is Bertie Wooster, and he's a character in a P.G. Woodhouse book called The Code of the Woosters. Anybody who's not familiar with P.G. Woodhouse, he's the creator of the iconic character Jeeves, and Jeeves does make an appearance in The Code of the Woosters. He is the butler, or however you want to say, for Bertie Wooster. Very, very laugh-out-loud funny book. Bertie just can't seem to win. He keeps finding himself in these tight spots and ends up needing Jeeves to get him out of them. So I like it. It's witty, very lighthearted, very British, and just, like I said, laugh-out-loud funny. A very, very light read that Livius, I'm sure, will never, ever want to read.
The only commentary I have on that book is that I'm pretty sure that I destroyed a copy that you gave me as it got waterlogged in the back seat of my car.
No, you did, but it was at a party that you were throwing at your house. I very thoughtfully brought you a book to read, and halfway through the party, someone brought it out and said, "Whose book is this?" And I was like, "Son of a..."
Oh, well, there you go. But I know that some... So I'm familiar with the book, the waterlogged copy of it. Yeah, P.G. Woodhouse. Woodhouse. So... there you go, P.J. Woodhouse, the funny version of Billy Lafitte, apparently. Okay. For shout-outs this week, I don't have a traditional shout-out. I don't have an author I want to talk about so much as an event. Those of you who are familiar with the Chicago area might know already. This weekend is the Printer's Row Book Fair that's sponsored by the Chicago Tribune, many years running now. It is a vast collection of booksellers and publishers and different events, author panels, discussions. It's a two-day event downtown Chicago. The Booked podcast street team will be out there with some freebies, and we're giving away 1,000 Booked marks this weekend at the fair. So hopefully if anybody is listening from the Chicagoland area, maybe we'll see you there. If you see somebody waving around a bunch of bookmarks, that could very well be me. Stop and say hi.
And just to clarify, the Printer's Row Book Fair is Saturday and Sunday, June 4th and 5th. It's down in the Loop in Chicago. Just take the L down to, let's say, Library, get off, and look south. You'll see thousands and thousands of people who just care about books.
That's just Rob showing off with his knowledge of the CTA / RTA system. He does this all the time.
You went... All right.
We were down there a couple of years ago. It is absolutely huge. We even kind of trudged it out in the rain a little bit. It was a good time. Literally hundreds of thousands of books available, mostly reasonable prices. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of Stephanie Meyer books sitting out there, but there's also collectibles and first editions and just, you know, entire tents on nothing but like travel books. And I mean, if it's written, you're going to find it there somewhere. If you spend your time looking in, you're probably going to get a good deal.
Yeah, one of the things that was kind of a surprise treat for me is, I don't know why this is, but I'm a big fan of the Not for Tourist guides. And if you don't know what Not for Tourist guides are, it's basically a series of guidebooks that that exist for probably a dozen different cities in the United States and maybe a couple cities internationally. And the reason I like them is that they're kind of crowdsourced. A lot of the reviews and stuff come from people that live in the neighborhoods and stuff. Anyway, not a plug for them. I just wanted to point out that randomly I ran across a tent of theirs at the Printer's Row Book Fair and ended up buying, I think, two or three of their books because they were giving them, if not 25% off, maybe it was even half off. So wasn't even expecting it, but that was a nice little treat.
He loves them because there's a lot in there about public transportation, and that's the part he's not telling you.
And they have a little strap that holds them closed that's a lot like a moleskin.
Oh, man. And all right, maybe I will do a little book shout out that's kind of related to this conversation. One of the books I bought there from one of the indie publishers that was selling them, you know, at a table, everything was stuff they published, was the title of the book is Boring, 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 Boring. It is available on Amazon. Zach Plague is the author. Just kind of follows around. I mean, there's a little bit of a mystery there, but it follows around a bunch of 20-somethings in art school and the just kind of the weird stuff they get involved in. So as a, you know, as a little tie in there, that's what I picked up there. I really enjoyed the book. It's also a book that's available in poster form. You can actually buy a poster. That's the whole book, if memory serves correctly, which is something I'd never seen before.
So to tie that all together, Booked, Livius, and the The booked street team will be at Printer's Row this upcoming weekend, June 4th and 5th. They'll be handing out booked marks, and checking things out. So if you plan on being there, hit us up on Twitter, at Booked Podcast. Maybe you can meet up, hang out, get to know Livius a little bit, and the booked street team.
And that brings us towards the end of our podcast. Couple other noteworthy things I want to mention. Again, super, super excited. First of all, this is our 10th episode. So happy anniversary to us for pulling off 10 episodes. I'm sure there are people out there that after they heard the first couple said they'll never see number 3 or 4. We're 10 in, and a very exciting first for us. We mentioned this on our last podcast, and now we have a little more definitive time. We're going to be interviewing Caleb J. Ross, the author of Stranger Will that we reviewed on our last episode. That should be up in just a couple of days, so that will be episode 11. And of course, as we mentioned, episode 12, Anthony Neal Smith. So we are going to be doing two interviews, two author interviews, our first and second ones. I couldn't be more excited to have these guys on. It's just going to be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to it. That guarantees us at least 12 episodes. Where we go from there, who knows? Also, if you tune in to the next couple episodes, we will be giving away some details, some hints and details at a couple of giveaways we're going to be doing, which is also very exciting. All right, so that being said, and it's a lot of information to throw out at you, trust me, it's a lot of information for us to take in. It's very exciting times here at Booked Podcast. But here's what you can do for now. If you haven't already, go out, go online, buy Stranger Will by Caleb J. Ross, read through it really, really quickly, and if you still need more convincing that that's the book to read, we'll have the author on here to tell you all about it himself on our next episode.
Sounds good. Hey, before we wrap it up, I just want to say one more time how you can get in touch with us. You can go to bookedpodcast.com. You can listen to our shows there, or you can find us on iTunes. You can email us at bookedpodcast@gmail.com, and you can hit us up on Twitter at bookedpodcast.
And if you haven't yet, follow, like, share. You guys know what I'm talking about. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, share with your friends, and please post some comments on the webpage. We'd love to read what you guys are thinking. So until next time, for Booked Podcast, I'm Livia Snedden.
And I'm Rob Olson. Keep reading.
I hear the voices, the tremble of cold, the feminine of the